Gentlemen, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue sitting here. And I just see that the lady who adds some charm and grace and some intellect to the program is joining us. Hi, Diana.
Hi, John. Hi, Stacy. My intellect is so great that I had trouble getting the app to come up to the right site.
Sometimes
the right podcast. What can I say?
It's in spite of the software.
How are things down there in beautiful Valdosta?
Last weekend's rally went off really well. I was talking to a couple people who, one guy who got to ride in the motorcade, evidently it went, considering the short notice, really well, really smoothly. Everybody had a great time. There were no issues.
No issues.
Really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you've got much Antifa down there in Valdosta, Georgia.
They probably would have to come across the line from Florida.
Yeah. Well, anyways, tonight.
By the way, we forgot, because we're still working on this three-way introduction, we forgot to mention that you blog at theothermccain.com and that I have been known to put blog posts at hoguewash.com.
Yeah.
Diana has a blog, but it's about her business. And
we're going to keep that. We're going to keep the necessary degrees of separation there.
If she wants to plug it, she can.
Okay.
All I do is talk about nonprofit world. It's not very interesting to people who are political junkies.
Well, it may get to be. We'll get to that in a little while. But meanwhile,
Stacy
is a football junkie. Go for it.
Yeah, college football. Right now, with less than 4 minutes left, number 17 North Carolina leads number 10 Miami 62-26. And that's at Miami. So Miami taking it on the chin on their home field there.
Well, you know, it's not the only team having troubles on their home field, although Vanderbilt is managing to maintain their perfect losing record. Right. It's about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter in Tennessee, 35, Vanderbilt 10 in Nashville.
Okay. Well, we have one person. Okay, who cares about Vanderbilt football? And that's John. So, anyways, meanwhile, in the Big Ten, there weren't many games today. Several games got canceled or postponed, but number 16, Iowa, 28, Wisconsin, 7, Oklahoma State, 42, Baylor, 3, and, of course, the number one undefeated Alabama Crimson Tide 52-3 over Arkansas. Number 9, Georgia 49 over number 25, Missouri 14. So that was a kind of a blowout. Number 13, Coastal Carolina held on 42-38 against Troy. That's when I went to Jacksonville State University, Troy State was our big
arch rival. And, you know, we used to say, if you can't go to hell, go to Troy. But anyways, Coastal Carolina struggled with Troy. So that's interesting. Northwestern, speaking of the Big Ten, 28, Illinois 10. Out west, Utah 38, Colorado 21. Kicking off shortly will be LSU at number 6, Florida. At 7:30, the annual USC-UCLA game will be played. And that's about it for college football this week.
So now I'm going to get into some administrative stuff about this week and next week. First of all, about next week, Stacy is going to take the week off because he'll be in Michigan at his son's wedding.
Yes, my youngest son, Emerson, is getting married to a wonderful young lady next weekend. And
that's an excused absence for you.
Okay.
That is definitely an excused absence.
So I won't be podcasting during the during the wedding. I don't know what I'll be doing, but
All you have to do is sit there and smile.
But you and Diana will carry on.
Well, we will determine what we're going to do. Diana and I will have a conference later.
TBD.
Yes, okay. TBD. So if
be on. If nothing else, I'll read off some stuff from Stacy's blog.
okay, so
you'll be the designated reader.
Well, then next week we will originate from Studio B at Stately Hogue Manor rather than the undisclosed location. Okay, that takes care of that bit of stuff. Now I want to talk about how we're going to put together this week's show. We're going to talk about what I've called coming attractions for the first half of the show. And by that, I mean, based on what's happened over the last month or so, what looks like might be happening over the next 6 months to year. And it's somewhat speculative. But in order to set the thing up, Stacy did a piece about the margin of theft. And that kind of sets the groundwork for what we're running on.
During our election night coverage here on the other podcast, John Hogue kept referring to the reported vote totals in each state as either being inside or outside the margin of theft. And so what happened after election night in the pre-dawn hours of November 4th, was that tens of thousands of votes for Joe Biden were found and shifted the results in 6 key states with a combined 79 electoral college votes. You know, the people have looked at it and said that, you know, this was statistically impossible. It's like 1 in a quadrillion chance that.
Well, that was just for the one state. And when they compounded it over the 6 states, it was 1 to the quadrillion to the 4th power. Okay. Now, let me explain to you. 1 million is 6 zeros. 1 billion is 9 zeros. 1 trillion is 12 zeros. 1 quadrillion is 15 zeros. And 1 quadrillion to the 4th is 1 chance in 1 followed by 60 zeros.
Yeah.
So
that's worse odds than my getting a date with
there would be no math in this one. It was I am merely a journalist. I don't do math. However, let me run down the results in the 6 states, okay? NBC News. This is according to the NBC News website. Georgia, with 16 electoral votes. There were a total of 4.9 million votes cast, and the margin was 11,928, which is 0.2%. Okay, that's the closest state. Arizona, with 11 electoral college votes, Total votes cast was 3.3 million. The margin was 10,457, which is 0.3%. Wisconsin, 10 electoral college votes, a total of 3.2 million votes cast. The margin was 20,682, or 0.6%. Now, if you take those three states, if they'd went the other way, it would be Biden 271, Trump 269. So in other words, it would be very nearly a tie in the Electoral College without those three states, which, as you can see, have a combined, the margin for those three states is less than 45,000 combined. And then you get to Pennsylvania, where the margin was 1.2% of the total votes cast. Nevada, it was 2.4%. Michigan, it was 2.8%. People have pointed out a lot of anomalies.
Right. And it basically, it looks as if the Democrats' scam was this. They had an algorithm running that based on voter registration, they would skim Republican votes to Democrats. And the more heavily Republican an area was, the less they would skim so that it would be less obvious. But they were skimming votes. The problem was the Republican turnout was so large, the vote for Trump was so big that it overpowered their algorithm, and they literally had to then start running fake ballots through.
Yeah, the pause, as everyone noted, there was a pause at
within minutes of each other in four states.
Right, damn. Right. And this was, this was exceedingly strange, and it suggests that some intervention took place.
Well, today in a filing, the Sidney Powell has alleged that in fact there were Dominion Systems hardware connected to the internet, and that there was intervention by a couple of foreign powers.
Well, I don't want to get into speculative theory. But.
Well, whether that's true or not, whether there's IT capture of packets going back and forth, the point is that's not a completely unbelievable claim at this point.
Well,
it's not necessarily
anomalies.
Proven.
It's
not proven, but it's a believable claim.
Right. And see, I don't want to get into the details of explaining how anything might have taken place, except I'm pointing out the anomalies in the four closest states, right? Okay. The largest margin, the smallest margin, excuse me, by which Trump won any state was in North Carolina, where his margin was 74,481 votes, 1.3%, which was greater percentage-wise than the margin by which Biden allegedly won Pennsylvania. In other words, Biden won all four of the four closest states, which coincidentally gave him just enough electoral college votes to win the White House. So what a coincidence, right? Now, the point I'm trying to make here that I want to get to is that it's not a conspiracy theory to note these anomalous results.
Right, and particularly noting them in the fact that he actually had negative coattails.
That is another remarkable thing about this. The Democrats, Nancy Pelosi got her ass kicked. I think they lost a total of 13 House seats.
But they were supposed to pick up 15.
I think it's 15.
Right,
I think
right.
They've lost 13. I think it's at this point, there's one seat where today, 12 new votes got dug up. And the margin of victory was 12 votes. So you may, you know, make of it what you will.
Yeah.
But I think that it's 13 or 14 seats.
Right.
We could look it up.
But the point is that instead of, you know, the hit they took was almost equal to the gain they were expecting. And mm-hmm. Pelosi is in deep trouble with her caucus. I mean, I don't know that they're not going to. Well, she's already been selected as the next speaker. But still, you know, what we have coming is an interesting year. The fat lady ain't singing yet, but I can hear her warming up backstage. And the odds are highly favorable now that the theft is successful, that a Democrat is going to be taking the oath of office on January 20th. However, the Democrats have overreached. His fraudulency, Mr. Biden, that's spelled X-I-D-E-N, by the way, has been and will continue to be extremely costly victory here for him. The ballots theft in the election was so thoroughly bungled that even a third of Democratic voters believe that it's a stolen election now. There's simply no way that you're going to get the public to believe in the integrity of future elections without stringent counting procedure reforms.
By the way, that was a Rasmussen Reports poll mm-hmm. that found that 47% of Americans, including a third of Democrats, believe that Biden cheated.
And that was 10 days ago. The numbers are actually up now.
Yeah. Although don't tell that to Monmouth, which is what every single Democrat on social media goes to. Supposedly found a bunch of Republicans who were willing to say, oh, no, it wasn't stolen. It was all legitimate and above board, which I don't believe for a second, and neither does anybody else. And don't bother with arguing with this, because if you start doing the cross tabs, well, the usual thing. They didn't sample very many people, and it's overweighted to Democrats.
What do you want to bet those Republicans have live in states that have legalized dope?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a big fight coming in the blue states over election procedures.
Yeah.
And now some of those blue states have now flipped their legislatures, or at least one house of their legislatures, into the Republican mm-hmm. column. So there's going to be a lot of political bandwidth eaten up in those states over the next year about election reform. That's not the only thing we've got coming up in terms of overreach. The left basically over the last year, but for the last 5 years, has been using street violence as a tactic to get their way.
Speaking of street violence, right now, as we speak, Antifa is attacking Trump protesters in the streets of D.C. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah. Well, but see, I'm talking to people who are not politically on the left. They're not politically on the extreme right. They're really the kind of people you think about the center in American politics. And they're all veterans. And they've all had enough. And
more than enough.
Yes. And to be quite bluntly, if the public order breaks down, there are enough of those veterans that they're going to look back at history and they're going to see things like the Battle of Athens from 1946. Mm-hmm. You don't know what that is. Google Battle of Athens, 1946. But basically it had to do with a group of veterans taking their town back from a corrupt political machine that involved basically a war between the veterans and the sheriff's department.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that sort of stuff doesn't happen. And, you know, even the mayor of Portland is coming around to the fact that the thugs need to be brought to heel. But if they aren't, they will be.
Well, remember that they have been allowed to run rampant. The Red House protest, you've read about that?
Mm-hmm.
These young idiots have long guns, they have Glocks. Anybody who describes a Glock as a military Glock makes me want to slap him. My palm starts itching.
Well, it was developed as the sidearm for the Austrian army, and it is carried as an official sidearm by probably a dozen or so nations.
Yeah, it's also my local PD carries Glocks. I personally don't like Glocks, but that's me.
I shoot them real well, and I hate them.
I don't like them very much. I shoot them well, but they don't fit my hand very well. And considering that I favor a 45, what can I say? Anyway, scooting happily past that, there's these idiots are thinking that they can take a suburban neighborhood and withstand a siege or an attack by actual trained people. And one, this isn't going to end well, but a lot of people are going to get badly, badly hurt in the process.
Yeah.
This has been encouraged. It's been allowed. It's been, to borrow their phrasing, privileged. And what's about to happen is going to be really ugly. And, well, the Red House won't be standing after it's all done.
No. Well, the other thing that's happened this year that has basically pissed off the public is the left has overreached into our day-to-day lives, trying to unscientifically control our behavior using the Wuhan virus pandemic as an excuse. You know, today was the 307th day of the 15 to 45 days that I was told I wouldn't be working on center at Goddard Space Flight Center. Now, I've been working remotely the entire time. And as a matter of fact, I've even put in overtime. So I haven't missed a paycheck. Matter of fact, I made more money than I expected in trying to keep things up. But there are too many people who have been crushed financially for no good reason. Too many have had non-pandemic medical issues complicated by incompetently designed and managed lockdowns. Mm-hmm. Too many people have died in nursing homes because of stupid regulations. Mm-hmm. Too many people haven't been able to go to their house of worship. But people are starting to fight back now, and we'll get into some of the legal aspects of that in a little while, but there are just now too many instances of nonconformance and too many court cases going forward before honest judges for the blue states to maintain the control much longer, especially since blue state law enforcement is now starting to rebel and refuse to enforce these orders from the politicians. Meanwhile, the Republicans have increased their level of control in the legislatures, as we're talking about. And that means they're going to control redistricting, which puts the House further in jeopardy for the Democrats. So all is not lost. But that's not to say that the next year is necessarily going to be pretty easy. You might title a movie about 2021 as Empire, but the Deep State Strikes Back. It's going to be interesting. But the problem the deep state has now is the deep state was effective in what they were doing because what they were doing was behind the scenes, and it isn't anymore. One of the things that the Trump administration has done is kind of ripped the bandage off of that sore so that people can see what's going on. And it's going to be interesting to see how the, quote, return to the norms that the Democrats are talking about, how they try to use the deep state, and that the smarter people in the deep state are going to move on to something else. They're going to find another sinecure because
God help nonprofit world.
Yeah, that's and academia. Mm-hmm. But the Biden-Harris attempt to to renormalize the left, if you want to call it that, using the bureaucracy is going to be, it's going to hit a whole lot of, well, let's just call it resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of work, though, that has to be done to keep exposing what's going on. And one of the things I think I see coming that is going to be a benefit to Stacey and me is a return to the blogosphere that we saw maybe 10 years ago. We're going to see more people moving off of things like Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and going back to the way we were doing it when I first started doing this. You know, mm-hmm. our own independent blogs with maybe even our own hosting. Mm-hmm. But we need to do that in order to be able to expose what's going on. And we need to remember Alinsky's Rule 5. Humor is our most important weapon. Mm-hmm. These folks can't take a joke and they can't stand being laughed at. So
the devil cannot bear to be mocked.
No, they're too self-important. And so what we need to do is to just keep laughing at them, keep going at them, and keep our sense of humor.
Yep.
2021 could really out crazy 2020. So fasten your seatbelts, folks. It's about to get interesting.
Just
meanwhile,
limericks. Limericks always work, and anybody can make one up.
Well, yes. But, you know, one of the things that does that the left doesn't seem to be able to do is comedy. They can't meme. They can't tell good jokes. On the other hand, we got people like Cruiser.
Yes. Stephen Cruiser, who now blogs at Pajamas Media, has announced a new policy. Stephen Cruiser is actually a stand-up comedian.
Well, so was Steve Crowder.
Well, the point is that Cruiser, back in the day, whenever there was a conference like CPAC or something like that, the suite where Cruiser would stay would become the Cruiser Cabana after mm-hmm. hours, and everybody would go to his room to party. He announced a new policy this week. Quote, "I didn't used to be this mean-spirited about politics, but after what they did for the last 4 years, I find myself a bit bereft of any charitable feelings for the Democrats," close quote. And he got a shout out from Rush Limbaugh talking about the gigantic Trump rally last weekend. Quoting Rush Limbaugh here, "Democrats thought this was all going to go away. They believed that the Republicans would give up, that they would recognize that they've been defeated and just go away. And it isn't happening. The whole point of making America great again, or putting America first, it is as important now as it was in 2016. And just because there's been a potential electoral setback, it doesn't mean they're going to disband. They're not going to become the Tea Party where you can't see them anymore. They're going to be active. They're going to continue to be a thorn in the Democrat Party's side. And that's going to be fun," which is perhaps not the kind of fun we might have wished for, but you have to take what you get and be grateful.
On the other hand, I have this, are you pondering what I'm pondering thing? It's a joke every day at noon at Hogwash. And that started out making jokes about President Obama. And I'm sure that it will continue making jokes about whoever's president. So, you know, laugh at them. And it keep them exposed.
You know, one of the things, and you talked about, and people don't understand. I think a lot of people on our side do not understand what it was that Trump disrupted. Okay, when we speak of the deep state. Okay, the deep state refers to the national security apparatus, the State Department, the diplomats, the people at the FBI, the CIA. Go ahead.
And at other regulatory agencies that can manage what we're doing. There's deep state people at the EPA. There's deep state people at the Department of Agriculture. And, you know, why do you think the Department of Education has a SWAT team?
Okay, so go back to 1993, when President Clinton was sworn in. Okay, what you had in the next 24 years, you had 8 years Democrat, 8 years of Bush, right? And then you had 8 years of Obama. So you had 16 out of 24 years with a Democratic president. Okay.
Well, but you also had Daddy Bush in on the front end of that, and that's part of the same thing. That's where the seeds planted.
The point is that since the end of the Cold War, okay, for in a period of 24 years, 16 of those, two-thirds of them, were Democratic presidencies, so that liberal policy, okay, embedded themselves in the bureaucracy. Okay, people wonder what happened to, you know, back in, you know, the Reagan years, why were we able to do things and win landslides and stuff like that? The thing is that in the post-Cold War period, the left managed to embed themselves in the bureaucracy in Washington. And what happened, remember, speaking of Daddy Bush, after at the time of the first Gulf War, he spoke of a new world order. Okay, and Francis Fukuyama spoke of the end of history,
and we've been a bit better off with 1,000 pints of light.
And what happened? And what happened was is that there developed this idea of what the post-Cold War alignment would look like. And it involved our European allies. Do you remember about 2002, 2003, how much effort the Bush administration devoted to trying to get our European allies to support our invasion of Iraq? And this is because...
I remember 2003, the Axis of Weasels.
Yep.
Okay, so we were sitting around begging Belgium and Luxembourg and Italy and France. They don't have any military power. As military allies, Europe is useless. Okay? They won't do anything. They haven't fought a war and don't intend to fight one. So if we ever get our if we ever get our rear ends in a grinder, okay, we have allies who are effectively useless to us. And but this is what the deep state was defending when Donald Trump came out and said America first. Okay, what he was talking about is we're not going to sit around and let Belgium tell the United States what our policy will be. And, you know, and one of the things he insisted on was that NATO keep their commitments. Okay, our European allies in NATO were not doing their share of the work. And so either Europe gets its act together or, you know, the point is America alone. This was the title of a Mark Stein book, you may recall.
I do.
Anyways, and so the point is that you have to understand what it is the deep state is defending, and it's this alliance with Europe.
It's not just that. There was a lady, there was a person on a page on Facebook. I'm not going to give her name or anything like that. Retired State Department worker, essentially, who was like, she would not vote for Biden, but she wrote in somebody else entirely rather than vote for Trump, because she said Trump's disruption of all these norms was, in her view, leading to disaster. And my response was, I didn't get into it because I have sworn off arguing politics online. But I said, I'm asking, okay, wait, for the first time in, frankly, my lifetime, we are actually achieving foreign policy goals. The world is actually more stable and safer because of Trump's policies. And saying that somehow or other, one of the things that was said was, well, as soon as Trump is out of office, all of these, the Abraham Accords are going to go away. To which my response mentally was, wow, that's really depressing. So you're saying essentially that the United States foreign policy is basically for failure. You want us to essentially enable violence and promote discord in the Middle East. That's what you want. Because the that's what the norm appears to be. Anyway.
And the thing is, this is how we get into agencies that you're not thinking of, like the EPA or whatever, yeah. Because, you know, more pipelines, more fracking, more of that. And all of a sudden, Russian and Arab oil doesn't have the economic impact it had in the world.
Correct.
And it certainly affects places like Iran. So that's part of being done here. And this, you know, J.E. Dyer is a retired naval intelligence officer. And she had a post that I wrote about earlier this week, mm-hmm. where basically she's saying that the stuff that might be declassified between now and January 20th mm-hmm. might be, well, let's just say it could stir the pot significantly. The other thing that is going to put a monkey wrench in what you see the left doing is there was an important First Amendment victory. Well, there's been several of them. The first one was the California Church and the Brooklyn Synagogue winning in the Supreme Court. There has been another case that was came out this week, where the Supremes, in the case of a couple of Muslims, ruled that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act allows you to sue government officials for money damages.
Yep.
Gavin Newsom may have to sell his winery to afford some of the stuff he's done.
He didn't pay for that in the first place. But, anyway, sorry.
But the thing is, life is going to go on. And believe it or not, folks, Stacey has got some good advice on how to keep sane.
I had a post this week called How to Maintain Your Sanity. And it is illustrated with an engraving from Harper's Magazine, I believe it was, back in the day. And if you don't recognize the engraving, it's the bombardment of Fort Sumter. Okay, because
by the way, my father was once stationed at Fort Moultrie during the Second World War, which is where the gunfire came from.
Right. Anyways, and folks, maybe some younger people don't know anything about history, but I think most of our listeners on the other podcast know what happened at Fort Sumter yep. in April 1861. And I said that some readers have noticed that I have barely commented at all about the legal wrangling over the presidential election. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you believe Democrats stole the election, I'm totally with you. But the real question is what can be done about it? And because I'm not a lawyer, I am not qualified to estimate the likelihood of success of efforts to challenge the results. Okay. And So what I have been trying to do is to avoid the hair on fire screeching hysteria that's been going around. Because,
boy, howdy has it.
Yeah. And, you know, people who are on our side, okay, are tearing at each other's throats, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's just not helpful.
My problem is the invented lies. I mean, there's enough verifiably true stuff that about things that's wrong, that are wrong, or at least enough stuff where there's reasonable doubt that you don't have to make shut up.
Yeah. And so the reason I have avoided it is because it's not good for my mental health. Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things you have to do to maintain your mental health is to have self-awareness, to be able to monitor your own moods and to realize when you might be going off in the wrong direction. You remember last week we talked about Melissa Rain Lively, the Phoenix businesswoman, who fell into the rabbit hole of QAnon conspiracy theories. Now, that's what I'm saying is that this was something because she is someone who is apparently a trauma survivor. The QAnon allegations about what was going on just triggered her. There were a lot of women apparently who fell into that rabbit hole because of their own experiences. And so I have to, you know, sort of tune this thing out on the election controversy because it's beyond my control.
Well, I mean, we have to be responsible for ourselves, and we have to realize what we aren't responsible for and can't control. Okay. The next few years are going to be difficult, but as a Christian, I believe that God isn't going to put me in any situation that's beyond what I can do. Of course, the way I'm looking at the future right now, I'm kind of on the same wavelength that Mother Teresa when she said, yeah, but I wish God didn't trust me so much.
Yeah, my friend of mine has a mug that says, I know I should let Jesus take the wheel, but sometimes I think we're off-roading.
Well, you know, the thing is that what drives people crazy is their belief that they are entirely sane. Okay. Yeah. Is that you have to be able to recognize your own craziness. Okay.
And as a recovering Democrat, and by the way, I mean that in the sense of like 12 steps sort of recovery, you know, the second step is came to believe in a power greater than ourselves who could restore us to sanity.
Right. And I raised the point about Jared Loughner. Now, some of you have forgotten the guy who shot Representative Gabby Giffords in Arizona in 2011. And I wrote about this at the time. What had happened to Loughner is that he had become obsessed with a conspiracy theory documentary video called Zeitgeist. And one of the things about things that make you crazy, okay, is that where paranoia comes from is a threat against which you are powerless. Okay,
well, that's most of life.
Right. It is that the idea, the belief that the election has been stolen and there's nothing you can do about it, and you want to do something. You want, you know, we use in politics a lot of times the language of warfare, mm-hmm. okay, that we want to keep up the fight and stuff like this. Well, some people will, and this is inevitable, by the way, some people will take that language, that rhetoric of combat, of conflict, and carry it into reality so that we will have, and we're going to have, and I'm just telling you this right away, we are going to have people on our side, quote unquote, who are going to engage in acts of political terrorism. And it is just as
You can set your watch by it. And I talked to someone whom we both know. I'm not going to name any names this week, talking about it this week. And he said the question is not whether we're going to have political violence. It's how much. OK, you know, it not how many of these type of terrorist activities, not whether they happen, but how many of them happen. And in my post, I talk about the real possibility. And I hate to say this, the real possibility of civil war. A syndicated radio talk show host, John Fredericks, reported that a Republican member of Georgia's legislature told him that veteran members of the Republican Party are afraid they are going to be harassed and attacked by the left. The older Republicans are worried that Black Lives Matter and Antifa, quote, are going to burn down Atlanta, and they, meaning the Republican legislature, will be blamed for it. So, you know, and so this fear of political violence.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, Atlanta has been burned down before.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the Republicans who did it.
Look, when I talk about, you know, a lot of people right now, there's been a lot of loose talk out there about Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And I am from Douglas County, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up, our field trip, you know, a common field trip in Lithia Springs was to Sweetwater Creek State Park, which had the tallest structure, the tallest man-made structure in Douglas County. The four-story ruins of the new Manchester Mill. In other words, that this what had once been the largest industry in Douglas County, destroyed by Sherman's cavalry, burnt to the ground, mm-hmm. and this pile of bricks, four-story tall, was the tallest structure in Douglas County more than a century later. That's how much economic damage my hometown suffered as a result of that war. It took over a century for Georgia to recover from what it suffered during the war.
And Tennessee was still recovering when I was a boy.
Right.
And I lived on the edge of one of the battlefields. We could go up on Shies Hill, which was literally across the street from where I grew up, and, you know, expended mini balls. Occasionally we'd find like an old rusted Colt revolver frame.
And so, anybody who thinks that we want a civil war another civil war in America.
Oh,
my God. Oh, my God. You don't know what we're talking about. We're talking 21st century technology. It's going to be a lot more. You know, it's not going to be uniforms and drummer boys and flags waving and marching, you know, to the beat and all that. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be Mogadishu. It's going to be Rwanda. It's going to be Sarajevo.
Well, it will be interesting to see, for example, what the California National Guard does and which side various parts of that come down on. But you know what? Life will go on. We will keep doing this. And one of the things that we do to do this is to talk about a yellow button, but we're going to skip over that for a minute. I mean, there is a yellow button at the other McCain, and there's a tip jar at hogwash.com, but Stacy engaged in proper rule five-ness by putting the picture of a very charming lady on a post, and that lady is someone who could use our help. And so Stacy's going to talk about hitting that tip jar instead.
Yeah, folks, this week we learned the post on the other McCain And it's about halfway down the page right now, as of Saturday night, is called Help the Good Canadian. Okay. And it's about Kathy Scheidel. Years ago, a decade ago or so, I began referring to Kathy Scheidel as the only good Canadian. Okay. Because my general hatred of all things Canadian is so well known, I'm surprised the SPLC hasn't taken notice. But that's the thing about hating Canadians. It's so commonplace, even liberals don't object to it. Anyway, some of my readers objected that Kathy was not the only good Canadian, and I'm willing to stipulate that there may be a few others like her, but none of them could possibly be as good as she is. Now, Kathy Scheidel blogged at 5 Feet of Fury, and I have met her. I met her at CPAC about, oh gosh, was it 12 years ago? It's been a while. I met her at CPAC, and she is diminutive. When she calls herself 5 Feet of Fury, it's more like 4'10" of Fury. She's a small lady with a big heart.
Well, she wears heels.
As she has been a columnist, she does film reviews at Mark Stein's blog. But her most famous aphorism is, quote, "You're not smart enough to tell me how to live." Close quote. Right. So, well, anyways, last year we learned that Kathy had developed ovarian cancer, and it is now in a very advanced stage. And so her husband, who blogs at Blazing Cat Fur.
Blazingcatfur.ca.
Yeah, yeah.
He's another good Canadian.
If you Google Blazing Cat Fur, you'll find it. There is a there's a post up at the top of the page. Thank you right now for all Instapundit and several other people have put up along with my blog, encouraging everyone to go to Blazing Cat Fur and hit their yellow button. Because that's her husband. That's Kathy Scheidel's husband. And she is in, folks, if you're familiar with oncology, I'll put it to you that way. She is in the stage of palliative care. And you know, I'm 61. She's a little bit younger than me. And, you know, there, but for the grace of God goes any of us. You know, it's just, you never know what life is going to deal with you. And she is truly not only a good Canadian, she is a great Canadian.
And it's a very difficult time for her family. Palliative care can just be a few days, but it can also last for months. In my wife's case, it was only about 10 days. But, you know, these folks can use our help.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, as disappointing as that is, my other significant disappointment came when the Supremes basically said that Texas didn't have standing to sue Pennsylvania. That was a very disappointing bit of legal occurrence during the week. On the other hand, it was interesting in terms of legal things happening that Hunter Biden's taxes now are. Well, Stacey, you wrote not so much about his taxes, but the way the mainstream media has covered the story or
over its face.
Yes, there's until it stopped moving.
Yeah. Well, okay, folks. Just to add my 2 cents to the Texas story before we move on a little bit more to Hunter Biden. On the Texas side, let me say that what was being alleged there is that the states
which had changed election law contrary to what is prescribed under the law. Okay, in other words, that the Constitution says that the state legislatures will determine the manner of choosing electors. And so, in other words, that the state legislature is in charge of setting up each state's election law. Well, they changed the law by executive fiat. They changed the rules and came up with this idea of sending out a mail-in ballot.
It varies from state to state, but there were four states that did it blatantly unconstitutionally.
Right. And so this is a problem. So anyways, okay, Hunter Biden. Folks, you remember, if you are a conservative, if you get your news from alternative media sources, that back during October, the New York Post, which is America's oldest newspaper, founded by Alexander Hamilton, the New York Post had reported about Hunter Biden's shady foreign investments. Okay, shady. Extremely shady dealings that people were giving him money. The corrupt Ukrainian energy company Burisma was involved, okay, among other things. Well, at the time, it was claimed by Democrats and many in the mainstream media claimed that this was Russian disinformation, right? That this was just a smear cooked up by Trump's KGB friends or whatever. And it was just a cheap smear against the New York Post, which had its Twitter account suspended.
Locked, actually.
Yeah, locked.
2 weeks.
Yeah, for 2 weeks. Facebook, if you couldn't post it to Facebook. And big tech suppressed this story, and the media would not report it. And so, but suddenly this past week on Wednesday, Joe Biden's son Hunter admitted learning, quote, that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware had advised his legal counsel that they were investigating his tax affairs.
Yeah, it turns out that there's several hundred thousand dollars worth of Burisma income that didn't get reported.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but I mean, you know, here's the other thing. That's the one thing. The other problem with Hunter Biden and where there's the much bigger pile of cash involved is his investors from China. Yeah. Of course, China has taken a lot of interest in certain American politicians.
I should mention I had moved out of Fremont before Swalwell primaried Pete Stark. Now,
okay, wait a minute. Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell represents an East Bay, that San Francisco Bay district. Near the suburbs of Oakland, basically, in California. And Diana used to be a California resident.
She's a refugee from the area.
I am a refugee. I am a political and economic refugee from the state of California, yes. Anyway, Pete Stark, I don't know if if you two remember him. I mean, there are a lot of Congress critters and they're all despicable, but this guy was the only white member of the Congressional Black Caucus.
Okay.
He was totally despicable. He would always stand, I went to a few town halls of his because, well, he was my Congress critter. And I truly despised him. I mean, after the third time I was there, they were always looking for rentals in the district so that they could actually have an address in the district. He had a mansion in DC. He was a horrible person. So no Republican has a prayer of winning the seat in Fremont, in that area, in that district. So nobody ever challenged Stark, no Republican. But when he was primaried by Swalwell, I honestly, if I had still been living in Fremont, I probably would have voted for Swalwell, and it would have been a horrible mistake.
Well, thank goodness you got out of California. But the thing is that, you know, the problem with...
But, you know, this is another crime story.
Right.
I mean, we were talking about Hunter Biden. That's a crime story. This whole thing with Swalwell is a crime story.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I don't mean that he's the victim of the crime either, necessarily.
Yeah. Well, anyways, by the way, I have started watching. If you're not watching it yet, I turned off Fox News, and I am now watching Newsmax TV. And this week, Richard Grenell, our former DNI, acting DNI.
Yeah, we met him at CPAC the first time when just as he'd been appointed as ambassador to Germany.
Yeah, that was 2017. Yes, met him in the lobby as he was walking through. Yes, at the hotel. Anyways, but Democrats in Congress are compromised by Chinese embeds, okay? Specifically those tied to the Intelligence Committee, like Eric Swalwell. Grenell said that the Chinese have infiltrated academia as well as politics, and something needs to be done. And the thing is that Swalwell was literally in bed, it appears, with a Christine Fang, whose actual name is Fang Fang, Fang Fang, Bang Bang. Me love you long time, G.I. See, I didn't want to go there. One of my commenters went there. And I have to say, I never had this problem, okay? You know,
Stacey, you're a racist.
See what I'm saying? Either way you go on this question, you're a racist.
But, you know, what do the following have in common? Equity funding for a sale of Dominion Systems, mm-hmm. Hunter Biden's investment partners, mm-hmm. Dianne Feinstein's chauffeur, Eric Swalwell's fundraising. The answer is left to the listener as an exercise.
Yeah. So anyways, yes.
But, you know, that's just the way crime goes. Sometimes it's the big stuff, and sometimes it's just, you know, people who are crazy, because crazy people are dangerous.
Yes, yes, yes. And we're now at the portion of the show, folks, where we talk about how dangerous crazy people are. I've been saying it for years. Crazy people are dangerous
to themselves and others.
To themselves and others. And so this week on the blog, I talked about how to end your criminal career. And it features a young woman whose name was Lakita Annette Davis. Notice the past tense there. When did she begin her criminal career? We don't know. I don't have all the information. We know that she was already familiar to police in Tennessee when she was arrested in Madison County in March 2016 for a string of thefts of fingernail polish from stores in Jackson, Tennessee.
Basically, for people who don't know the state of Tennessee, Madison County is where Jackson, Tennessee is. If you draw a line between Memphis and Nashville, Madison is probably a third of the way from Memphis toward Nashville. It's halfway between the Mississippi River and the Tennessee River. So that, you know, that's West Tennessee.
West Tennessee. Anyways, but
But that arrest did not end Davis's criminal career, as she was jailed in Shelby County, Tennessee.
That's Memphis.
Right. 6 months later on similar charges. 2 years later, in other words, in 2018, Lakeeta Davis was imprisoned in state prison in Jackson, Mississippi. Okay, so you get the idea that she was a habitual offender. We don't know when she was released from prison, but in October of this year, she was in Jonesboro, Arkansas, evidently engaged in her accustomed modus operandi. Along with three accomplices, two of whom were teenagers, Davis was shoplifting at the Dollar General store in Jonesboro, Arkansas. An employee called 911 and the suspects fled the scene with Davis behind the wheel of a silver 2018 Honda Civic. From the moment she drove away, the rest of her criminal life was measured in mere minutes. Now, I tell a story here about the Supreme Court decision 1985, Tennessee versus Garner decision, that had to do with when police are authorized to use deadly force against fleeing criminals. But I will fast forward through this. Lakeeta Davis and her accomplices had stolen only $30 worth of stuff from Dollar General. But the store employee who called 911 told the dispatcher it was a robbery. Use the word robbery. Oh. Now, if you're familiar with law enforcement and legal terminology, you understand that theft and robbery are two different things. Robbery implies the use of force, usually with a weapon.
Yes, all robberies are theft, but very few thefts are actually robberies.
Right. And so police believed when they took off, when she took off, fled the scene in the silver Honda, police believed that they were pursuing an armed robber.
Okay. Well, in fact, she was armed.
Well, she did have a 45 Glock in the car, but this confusion proved to be fatal. Okay. Because an Arkansas state trooper was monitoring the radio. Trooper Tanner Middlecock was at the Arkansas State Police Barracks in Jonesboro when he overheard radio traffic from Jonesboro Police in reference to the robbery in progress at Dollar General. He was nearby, so, quote unquote, I responded for assistance. So he was soon part of the pursuit behind Jonesboro officers, and he called into the radio and asked them to let him move ahead to the front of the pursuit because Arkansas state troopers are trained in what's known as the pit maneuver. Folks, if you don't know anything about this, this is where the police use their car to spin out the car that the suspect that they're chasing. Well, in most jurisdictions, it is the pit maneuver is limited to under 45 miles an hour because it's just not safe to do it at high speed. But Arkansas State Police, no limits. Okay. And
how fast were they going, Stacy?
126 miles an hour.
Is this why
you refer?
What?
In a Civic?
I'm not kidding.
No, Civics, generally speaking, you have to cry out encouragement and be going downhill with a really strong wind behind you to get them over 65.
Well, there is a performance version of the Civics, and but the thing is that 126 miles an hour, is this the reason why we're referring to her in the past tense?
Yes, yes. Trooper Tanner hit her bumper at 126 miles an hour. Okay. The Honda flew 250 feet off the road, nearly a football length, flipped over and smashed into a tree.
Well, she may have only been going 100 or so, and he may have been the one going 126, but it was a pretty good lift.
You can watch the video. It's on my blog, The Other McCain. Anyways, the Honda Civic is a very safe car, and somehow Davis's three passengers survived, but it was the end of the road for Lakita Davis. And speaking of the end,
we're at the end of the road for us.
Yes, and so, folks, we're coming up. Remember, next week, I won't be here because I'll be at my son's wedding. But 7 o'clock, The Other Podcast.
With Diana and me. Diana, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week.
Bye, John. Folks.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. I keep going down the road.